Ethan Frome, Disc 4.
Chapter 9. At the kitchen door, Daniel Byrne sat in his sleigh behind a big-boned gray who pawed the snow and swung his long head restlessly from side to side. Ethan went into the kitchen and found his wife by the stove. Her head was wrapped in her shawl, and she was reading a book called Kidney Troubles and Their Cure, on which he had had to pay extra postage only a few days before. Zena didn't move or look up when he entered, and after a moment he asked, "Where's Mattie?" Without lifting her eyes from the page, she replied, "I presume she's getting down her trunk." The blood rushed to his face. Getting down her trunk? Alone? "Jotham Powell's down in the woodlot, and Daniel Byrne says he darsn't leave that horse," she returned. Her husband, without stopping to hear the end of the phrase, had left the kitchen and sprung up the stairs. The door of Mattie's room was shut, and he wavered a moment on the landing. "Matt," he said in a low voice, but there was no answer, and he put his hand on the doorknob. He had never been in her room except once in the early summer, when he had gone there to plaster up a leak in the eaves. But he remembered exactly how everything had looked. The red and white quilt on her narrow bed, the pretty pincushion on the chest of drawers, and over it the enlarged photograph of her mother in an oxidized frame with a bunch of dyed grasses at the back. Now these and all other tokens of her presence had vanished, and the room looked as bare and comfortless as when Zena had shown her into it on the day of her arrival. In the middle of the floor stood her trunk, and on the trunk she sat in her Sunday dress, her back turned to the door, and her face in her hands. She hadn't heard Ethan's call because she was sobbing, and she didn't hear his step till he stood close behind her and laid his hands on her shoulders. "Matt, oh, don't. Oh, Matt." She started up, lifting her wet face to his. "Ethan, I thought I wasn't ever going to see you again." He took her in his arms, pressing her close, and with a trembling hand, smoothed away the hair from her forehead. "Not see me again? What do you mean?" She sobbed out. "Jotham said you told him we wasn't to wait dinner for you, and I thought..." "You thought I meant to cut it?" he finished for her grimly. She clung to him without answering, and he laid his lips on her hair, which was soft yet springy like certain mosses on warm slopes, and had the faint, woody fragrance of fresh sawdust in the sun. Through the door they heard Zena's voice calling out from below, "Daniel Byrne says you better hurry up if you want him to take that trunk." They drew apart with stricken faces. Words of resistance rushed to Ethan's lips and died there. Mattie found her handkerchief and dried her eyes. Then, bending down, she took hold of a handle of the trunk. Ethan put her aside. "You let go, Matt," he ordered her. She answered, "It takes two to coax it round the corner." And submitting to this argument, he grasped the other handle, and together they maneuvered the heavy trunk out to the landing. "Now let go," he repeated. Then he shouldered the trunk and carried it down the stairs and across the passage to the kitchen. Zena, who had gone back to her seat by the stove, didn't lift her head from her book as he passed. Mattie followed him out of the door and helped him to lift the trunk into the back of the sleigh. When it was in place, they stood side by side on the doorstep, watching Daniel Byrne plunge off behind his fidgety horse. It seemed to Ethan that his heart was bound with cords which an unseen hand was tightening with every tick of the clock. Twice he opened his lips to speak to Mattie and found no breath. At length, as she turned to re-enter the house, he laid a detaining hand on her. "I'm going to drive you over, Matt," he whispered. She murmured back, "I think Zena wants I should go with Jotham." "I'm going to drive you over," he repeated. And she went into the kitchen without answering.